Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled, and as she fled in her haste, he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth.
I'm Lois Noling, and I've been at West Metro since 2007. In 2009, my husband had a horrible accident. I found him, but thankfully I had a witness with me for a little bit of the story down the line. We called the paramedics, but before they got there, I was able to talk with him and find out what had happened and have a wonderful conversation. It was our last conversation. Paramedics came, they lifelined him to Atlanta, and after a long night of waiting, which lots of people go through, the doctor came to me and said, "Your husband's been in no pain," which I replied, "Well, I know he hasn't because of the conversation we had last night. He didn't act as if there was anything going on as far as pain." The doctor looked at me a little bit unbelieving and thought that, you know, I know he thought I was in shock, which I was, but I also had a witness. His sister was with me, Carla. She experienced the whole conversation and, well, she listened to everything. So the doctor explained to me the trauma that he had endured, and from that trauma, there was no way he really should have spoken to me. But you know, later on, after some of the grief had started to lift, it dawned on me, God gave me this incredible gift, the gift of speaking to my husband, never wondering what happened, having him talk to me and saying goodbye is, you know, our God's awesome. But the second part of this is, as a form of service, I'm able to be a small part of the grief ministry here at West Metro, and that way I'm serving others. So like I said, God's an awesome God.
I don't know what it would have been like to be a five-year-old Mephibosheth and to hear the news, however much he would have heard of his father and his grandfather, what had happened at Jezreel, losing both of them. And then what happened next was a horrible tragedy in Mephibosheth's life, another horrible tragedy, just back to back, as there's a fall and now he's lame, and so he has to go through life in a very difficult way, no longer able to walk, in many ways not able to take care of himself, and he didn't live in the 21st century either. It's incredibly difficult to do that now, but imagine what it's like around 3,000 years ago, and the stigma in that society in particular that would have followed him his whole life. I have a unique view, by the way. I guess y'all realize that. And you probably noticed before, and I've probably said this before, sometimes during songs and stuff, I'll just turn around. And I know some people look at me like, "I wish that preacher would behave and just turn back around." But I do that because I like to see who's here. And usually sitting closer to the front, I don't see very many people. I see the backs of some heads, but so I just like to turn around. I like to see who's here. And sometimes you catch eyes with people and you smile or wave and just make that community connection. So if you're wondering, I'm not acting up. That's just what I'm doing. But I'm used to facing this way. And it didn't hit me till last week, in fact, when I turned around and was staring at everybody. And Rick Haggerty was right behind me, of course, giving me a hard time. And he and I got to talking during the song, and it hit me. I started playing catcher when I was 5 years old. You know, that's the only position in baseball that, first of all, plays out of bounds. And also, he's the only guy that faces the wrong way. And so I guess this comes naturally to me, just to stare at everybody all the time. There's a reason I bring that up, of course. It's not just to get a laugh or two. Sometimes we stand at the beginning of the sermon and we wander around and shake hands and visit and have a great time and laugh together and make new connections and remake old connections. This morning I'm going to ask us to do something similar to that, but just a little bit different. And I know this won't be as comfortable for everybody as it is for a lifelong catcher. But if you're sitting anywhere in the front half, I invite you to stand and to turn around and just look. Wave. See who's here. And if you want to, walk back and say hello to somebody. Folks in the back, if y'all would also stand up so they don't feel like they're the only ones standing. Just stand and make contact with somebody this morning.
We're part of a family that's been born again. Part of a family whose love knows no end. For Jesus has saved us and made us his own. So we're part of a family. It's on its way home.
It's five chapters later that Mephibosheth, the story continues. I love the way that the writer kind of dropped that detail in 2 Samuel 4, Mephibosheth when he was just a little boy, and just kind of pinned it up on the board, as it were, just something to keep in mind, something I'm going to come back to later, kind of like Lois shared earlier, dropped that one detail and said, we'll get back to that later in the story. And that's what the writer does here in 2 Samuel. Because really the heart of the story with Mephibosheth gets spelled out for us in chapter 9. I know we've talked about this story before. I know I've preached about it several times, but it's just too good when we're talking about the community of God, it's too good to leave this story alone. Beginning in verse 1 of chapter 9, and David said, "Is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" David had made a promise to Jonathan. And if you know anything about the relationship between Jonathan and David, you know they were incredibly close friends, but also that they were incredibly close friends in the most difficult circumstances, because Saul, the first king of Israel, Saul was Jonathan's father, and Saul, we might say, and maybe this is an understatement, had a lot of struggles. And he tried to get rid of David on more than one occasion. And by get rid of, I don't mean exile from the country, of course. I mean by get rid of, to kill David. He wanted him eliminated. And so it's interesting that the son of that king was such close friends with David. Now, Saul had died and Jonathan had died, and David had mourned and grieved and wept over both of them, in fact, and now had made a promise to take care of their family. For their family had practically been wiped out. That little earthly community had effectively been eradicated, and so now David is looking for opportunity to make good on his promise. David's looking for opportunity to act like a person in community is supposed to act when it's a God-driven community. And so he asked this question, is there anybody left? Is there anybody left in Saul's house that I may show him kindness for the sake of Jonathan, my friend? And it goes on, now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. Probably actually pronounced Ziva in Hebrew. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziva?" And he said, "I am your servant." And the king said, "Is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him?" Let me read that again, because that's an important statement that David makes. First time he just said kindness. Did you note that? Now he clarifies exactly what it is that he intends to do for this yet unnamed person. Is there still someone, verse 3 again, is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him? Ziba said to the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He's crippled in his feet." Imagine that's just idiomatic in some sense. He's no longer able to walk. He's paralyzed in some form or fashion because of the fall in his childhood. The king said to him, "Where is he?" And Ziba said to the king, "He's in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel at Lodabar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel at Lodabar, which I think means not the word or something like that, oddly enough. Verse 6, "And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, 'Mephibosheth.' And he answered, 'Behold, I am your servant.' And David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always.' And he paid homage and said, 'What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I?'" We'll finish that next paragraph in just a minute, but pause and just think about what it must have been like in that moment. Of course, when Mephibosheth presents himself to David, he needs to have help, right? Carried along on somebody's back, carried along somehow in a basket or some sort of other device to transport him, because he's not able to bring himself. And can you imagine the trip from where Mephibosheth was to the house of David? Can you imagine how afraid he must have been? He didn't know what was going to happen. And he certainly couldn't defend himself. And even if he was able to defend himself, he wasn't going to do that to the front of the king. I mean, this man was the mortal enemy of his grandfather, even though a great friend of his father, he's a mortal enemy of his grandfather. So he doesn't know what to expect, and you can see the scene. Mephibosheth falls before the king, and David just calls out his name, "Mephibosheth!" says, you're going to eat at my table for the rest of your life. The king called Ziba, verse 9, Saul's servant, and said to him, all that belonged to Saul and to all his house I give to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table. You notice here the king is codifying the statement that he made. He's making it official here. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servant do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. I'm going to read that again too because I think that's significant. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son. His name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet. Did you enjoy just a moment ago turning around, looking into faces? I saw some waving. Some of it was jovial. Some of it was maybe a little bit silly. But nonetheless, making this contact with your brothers and sisters and friends and neighbors right here in this little community that we call West Metro. I can't tell you how many people, there'll be several, will come up to me this morning after this is over and they'll say, I love it when we do that. And you know what? I've never really asked people, I need to start asking this, so hold me to this today if you're going to be one of the dozen or more that comes to me and says that today. Make me ask you why. Why do you love it? Now, some may be thinking, well, it makes the sermon shorter. And I always get the jokes of, well, you must not have been as prepared today because you had to stand up and walk around a little bit to shave some time. That's not the case. I can go as long as you need me to. Probably even longer. But remind me to ask why, because I think that's an important question. I think part of it is we like to shake hands and say hey to people. Part of it is we spend some time worshiping together and celebrating together in our hearts, God willing, are in a good place. And that's no better time than right then to take a moment and to face one another, to share a word or two, a story or two, to talk about our week that was or the week, Lord willing, that's coming. Maybe to laugh about something, even to cry about something if need be. That just seems to be a great time to do it. And you know, that's a big part of what community is all about. But here's something else that I hope, if it's not going on, I hope it'll start going on when we look at each other in the eye, when we meet one another, whether it's at a worship service or some other gathering where we're together with brothers and sisters. I hope we'll start intentionally making plans to pick out people to serve and show them the kindness of God. And when I say intentional, I mean intentional. I mean like King David intentional. I mean calling down the servant saying, listen, I need to know somebody in this church that needs to be shown the kindness of God so that I can fulfill my promise that I've made back to God. And if you're a brother or sister in Christ, you've made this promise, oh, by the way, that I will participate in the community of God by intentionally taking care of my brothers and sisters in whatever way God gives me to take care of them. That's what I mean by intentionality. And maybe we're not going to call down Ziba the servant and ask him or ask her, whoever it may have been, who it is that we can help. Maybe that'll be the path that you take. Maybe grab one of the shepherds, grab me, grab one of our deacons, say, hey, who's somebody that I can just do something kind for that needs kindness in their life? Let me know who it is. That'd be a great way to go about it, but another way to go about it would to be to open our eyes and to take the initiative on our own to approach somebody and to say, brother or sister, I just want you to know I love you and I just want to do something kind for you. Is there anything you need? Is there a prayer that I can offer up for you? Is there something in your life that you need to share with somebody just to get the burden off your chest? Is there a celebration that you need to have that has not been celebrated because maybe nobody noticed or it seems that nobody cares? Let me care and show you the kindness of God. That's a significant part of being in community, for us actively to serve one another and to seek out one another, to find people to take care of and then to take care of them. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, there's several great paragraphs here, but one in particular that's not only great, it's also difficult, and I think it's difficult on several levels. Paul, of course, here is talking about spiritual gifts. He's talking about us as a body. He's using the human body as the example. Many of us, I know, have read this, and even if we haven't, we understand, again, how the human body works. It's a whole bunch of moving parts that God has created, and when they're all healthy and doing what they're supposed to do, guess what? The body's healthy, and the body does well, but when a part is missing or when a part is malfunctioning, for whatever reason, even no fault of its own, the whole body, right, tends to suffer along with it. And that's not just because the rest of the body has to compensate, although there are issues of compensation, but that part's just missed. There are things that can't be done, or at least they can't be done as well. There are people who can't be reached, and I've moved from this body to this body now, or at least they can't be reached as well because there are parts either missing or parts that are not, for whatever reason, able to function. So that's a brief summary of Paul's chapter 12. But here's what he says in that, I think, most difficult paragraph. Verse 21 says, "The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor. And our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another." I'm going to read part of this again, by the way. In fact, I may just read the whole paragraph again. "If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together." Let's let that just soak in for a minute. I'll read it one more time. I think it's worth it. "The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you." And we understand the silliness and even considering that, you're talking about the physical body. "On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor, and our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts don't require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it." And God did that for a reason, as Paul goes on to write, "that there may be no division in the body, but," and here is the money quote, "that the members may have the same care for one another." Paul is writing about, we may call it an equality of care. Does that make sense? That we may have the same care for one another. We're going to get back to that in just a minute. "If one member suffers..." And Paul didn't write this, but this is the context. "If one member suffers, regardless who that member is," that's the context here. "If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, regardless of who that member may be, all rejoice together." Now, I say this is difficult, number one, because I'm not convinced personally that I quite get everything Paul is going for here. I don't think I ever will. That's one reason it's difficult. Another reason it's difficult, because this is a hard topic. We have a lot of sermons and a lot of classes where we talk about serving one another. In fact, our small groups, we're focusing very closely, very tightly on one another passages. In fact, that's how we launched all of our groups, our very first meetings. We read those many one another passages together in our groups. And so we talk about this all the time in Bible classes and sermons. We probably listen to things on the radio and the Christian radio about these types of things. We share together in small groups. In fact, the prime purpose of small groups is one another stuff. And so we understand that being a part of the body is about service, do we not? It's about caring for one another. It's about Jesus' words in John 13 for the 10,000th or 100,000th time that we've shared it together. A new command I give you, that you love one another, which is going to be expressed how, typically, in how we treat one another, which is going to include primarily how we care for one another and serve one another. By this, all people will know you're my disciples if you love one another. We know this. Reality is, and this is human reality, whether people are Christian or not, reality is some people get served more and better than others do simply because of who they are. That's a pin drop moment, isn't it? Some people get served more and better simply because of who they are. It's just the truth. And there's not a person in here who hasn't suffered from that failing. Some of us suffer from it a whole lot more than others do, but we're all guilty on one level or another of it. We see it in our world. We've read many of the sociological and psychological studies about businesses and how somebody's a certain height or a certain weight, they're more apt or certain shape, they're more or less apt to be hired or promoted or paid more or paid less. You know what I'm talking about. If a person looks a certain way as opposed to looking a certain other way, they're more apt to move up than somebody who doesn't look that way. In other words, just to put it bluntly, sometimes it's the pretty and the popular that get served better and more than do the ones who aren't. That's how our world is. And unfortunately, sometimes that's how it works in churches, because churches are made up of fallible and broken humans. And that nature comes out in us, even in this community, from time to time. And I cannot help but think there's another Mark 10 application here. You remember a few weeks ago, did we need to and then grow up? We did Mark 10, 35 to 45, and both of those sermons use the exact same text. But you remember what Jesus said to his disciples about their behavior? You remember that? He kind of equated them to the Gentiles and how they operate. You know, the Gentiles have those who lord it over them, and then they have officials who exercise authority over them. That's not how it's going to be with you. Jesus is making a general statement there that says, effectively, you're acting like the world in your treatment of one another. That's not who we are. And I think there's an application when we talk about service, Jesus' words there, to us. We have an opportunity just in this community of God, right here at West Metro, we have ample opportunity to serve people. I do not want us, and I'm preaching to Ricky here more than anybody, trust me. I do not want us to look past the people who we typically don't notice. We need to start noticing the unnoticed and making sure that they're taken care of. Had David not been moved by the heart of God that lived in him to make that statement, I think Mephibosheth would have died a sad, crippled old man. Instead, we know he died crippled, but I think he died with joy. And he died knowing that somebody noticed him and cared for him and loved him. And do not miss the fact that there were many levels at which Mephibosheth could have gone unnoticed by the king. Not just his ailment, but also the family connection. And so when we look into one another's eyes, when we shake hands, when we laugh and share together, I pray we remember Paul's words. See, God composed the body, and God gave greater honor to parts that lacked it. I read a statement like that, and then I think in my mind, well, we're the children of God, correct? 1 John chapter 3, he says it. John 1 says it, that we had the right because of Jesus to become children of God. Paul writes about it in Ephesians 5 that has implications for us. So we're children of God through faith in Jesus Christ. And God has composed the body, and intentionally, God has honored the parts that typically lack it. Now, they typically lack it not because of God, but because of whom? It's because of humanity. It's because of the pecking orders that we have created in our world as human beings that we still suffer from, even as God's people. And so I ask myself the question, what can we do as God's community to be like Him and thereby give greater honor to the parts that typically don't receive it? What can we do, as Paul says earlier, to make sure that the parts of the body, verse 22, that seem to be weaker, and again, that's a human perspective, the parts that seem to be weaker, what can we do to ensure that those parts, whatever parts they may be, understand you are indispensable. You are honored. How can we, verse 23, learn to bestow greater honor on those parts who typically receive far less? I don't have a whole lot of great answers to those questions, but I do know that if we start being intentional one person at a time, we will not only make a difference in the life of those individuals, an eternal difference, but we will also be better functioning as the community of God, as He has composed it for His purposes. Probably one of the best known stories in all of Scripture, of course, is the story of the story of the Good Samaritan. The prodigal son's well known too, of course. The story of the Good Samaritan. Of course, Jesus, when He's telling parables, He's always being provocative, right? He's using provocative characters in His stories. A certain rich man, which immediately is going to set the commoner's teeth on edge. But often He used the Samaritan as the good guy. He used the Samaritan as the good guy. And so in that particular story, He tells, as you know, at least most of us, He tells the person who was beaten half to death on the road, and there goes the priest, right, and passes by on the other side. And you can see them listening with rapt attention. Oh boy. And there goes the Levite passing by on the other side. See, those are the people, they're the ones who are supposed to stop, right? They're the ones who are supposed to help. They're the ones who are not only supposed to notice, and I'm not saying they didn't notice. I'm saying they did notice and didn't respond. Those are the ones who are supposed to respond. They're the ones who know the law. They're the ones who know Leviticus 19, verse 18, love your neighbor as yourself. And it doesn't really qualify exactly who that neighbor is, which is the genesis of this whole story anyway, right? So priest passes by, Levite passes by. And maybe we're not doing too much injustice to the story if we say one Christian passes by, right? Another one passes by. And then that dirty, nasty, stinking old Samaritan that we hate so much, he stops and he helps. Not only does he helps extravagantly. He helps extravagantly to the point that he carries this wounded one to the inn, puts him on his donkey, takes him to the inn, and then he leaves extra money and says, whatever I owe you, even beyond that, I'll settle with you. I'll pay you back. And it's this great example of looking into the eyes of somebody who may otherwise have been left behind or gone unnoticed and saying, I'm going to care for you. I'm going to care for you because that's what the community of God is about. That's all I got today. Gary's going to lead us. We're going to stand and we're going to sing. And maybe you're convicted by what David did for Mephibosheth. Maybe you're convicted by Paul's words to us as he wrote to Corinth. about our responsibility as a body, that we have the same care one for another. Maybe there's something else in your life that is convicting you and you need to return to God. Or maybe you're convicted to come to God, to be immersed in Jesus as you confess His name and repent of sin. Whatever the need may be. Or let me add one. Maybe you've gone unnoticed. We want to hear from you if you have, and I know that's asking for a lot of courage on your part. But if you've gone unnoticed, we want to hear from you. We want to be further convicted so that we can take care of you. If there's a need, as we sing and as we stand, please come.
Father God.